Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Monday evenings, U.S. Eastern Time, as we explore homeopathy and facial analysis, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and Grant Bentley, homeopath and naturopath. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host Grant Bentley, the founder, principal, and senior lecturer of the Victorian College of Classical Homeopathy, Homeopathic Facial Analysis Research in Melbourne, Australia. And we have planned today a three-part series dealing with physics and homeopathy and facial analysis. I want to welcome Grant for getting on the line with me today. I was ready to take off and talk about the National Center for Homeopathy Joint Conference, which I just returned home from attending, where there were wonderful lecturers about all types and forms of the practice of homeopathy and all of the successes that people were having in their practices. There was a lot of excitement talking with and meeting with friends that you might have visited online and got to see them in person. And they already said, get ready for next year. I think it's April, I don't know if it's April 13th, 2013, but it's going to be in the same location next year. So it's best to get your tickets early. So today I would like to welcome you, Grant, and I hope that some folks will be on the chat with us. It might be a slow evening.
Hi, Debbie. How are you?
Doing okay, thank God. So our,
That's good. I'm glad to hear.
Yeah. So you're up early and getting the week going on a Tuesday already. So you have already started your week.
Yes, it's Tuesday at about 10 o'clock in the morning here. So I thought what I would do is that seeing though there are three more shows, I think, what I thought that I would do is just conclude it. When we talk about physics, it's not, look, I don't want people to get daunted. The problem is when you say things like physics, suddenly, you know, people just start tuning out, and it's in the kind of thinking of the X over the Y and so on. But it's nothing like that. All that I'm talking about is essentially it's about understanding the laws that tie particles together. So therefore, those particles end up becoming molecules, which end up becoming us. And those same laws that appear over and over and over again can be, all we're doing is just breaking it down to its most simplistic form. And once we've broken it into that really simple form, we can begin to understand how our remedies work and also too why HFA works. So all that I'm really saying here is that we've just got to understand the very, very basics of really it's the laws of attraction, repulsion, and this bonding or fusion. And so as a result of those three things coming together, we can begin to understand homeopathy and we can begin to understand our remedies. And it's that I just wanted to take forward a little bit, because I know that it's my feeling, and I understand I'm just a voice in the wilderness, and I'm not expecting people to agree left, right, and center with what I'm saying. But I just feel that homeopathy is taking a tangent away from where its real understanding should be. This is a world where psychology rules, and I get the fact that homeopathy is being caught up in psychology and psychoanalysis, and it's good, and I'm not saying that it's a road to nowhere. But what I am saying is that it's, I believe, a far more difficult and rocky road. And so I prefer, you know, look, Winston Churchill once said, why stand when you can sit? So it's a simple sort of thing for me that if I understand it a certain way, it means that the mystery of homeopathy is kind of taken out a little bit. And I just have to look at it, and I think to myself, well, that makes sense. Now, I understand that the mystery is really important to our humanness. I mean, people love mystery. We have been, since the dawn of time, sitting around a fire telling camp stories and ghost stories and wondering what if and wondering where we've come from and where we're going and what's beyond the veil and what's in the future. And it's all, we like to live in the mystery because it, to some degree the adrenaline is in the mystery. It's in the not knowing rather than the knowing, because once the knowing occurs, we can kind of sit down and often we go, oh, is that it? So it's kind of more the people love the mystery. And so I understand why the mystery in homeopathy is taking off to such a degree and such a focus on the mystery and the unraveling of the mystery and keeping the mystery mysterious. However, that's great if we're just going to look at homeopathy as almost an entertainment factor for ourselves, the wow factor that we get as a member of the audience when somebody, some speaker lifts open the veil and all of a sudden we can see this magic come alive. But I realised also that homeopathy is a two-pronged, it's a two-purpose thing. Yes, it is there for us to see the mystery. But for me, it was also for me to be of service, I guess. I wanted to make my living out of being able to do this at a practical level, not a mystery level. So to me, I kind of had to shed the mystery, because the mystery is a really interesting and intricate walk through the forest. But I just simply needed to get to the end. And so it means that I have to start looking at homeopathy in a far more pragmatic and non-mysterious way. And so what I did is that I decided that I was going to go back to the absolute basics. Hahnemann talks about homeopathy simply being the law of similars. The law of similars, there are a number of different names for this. You can call it Fibonacci, you can call it Mandelbrot, you can call it fractal patterns. It doesn't really matter. Or you can call it holograms. It doesn't really matter what you're going to call it. The simple fact of the matter is that it's about understanding that nature is very economical and that it repeats the same patterns over and over again. This is what every physicist and every mathematician ends up coming down to. Okay, as you learn more, all the equations on the whiteboard might become more and more intricate and mind-boggling until they just look like ants walking around on a page, because the mere mortal can't understand them. But the simple, the baseline to all of this is that it is A, understandable, and B, it is a repeating pattern. And that's what the law of similars is. We've got to understand what we mean by similar. Similar is not the disease. The disease part is not the important part. It's the similar that's the important part. And what does similar mean? It means something that looks like something else. So it already exists. The pattern is already there. So what I began understanding was that homeopathy is not that intricate, and it is not the mysterious walk through the forest. You can make it that way, and it's more entertaining for an audience that way, but you don't need it to achieve practical results. In fact, for me, and I'm only speaking for myself here, for me what happened was understanding it in a different light meant taking a three-hour consultation of perhaps thinking I'm getting down to the root or the kernel of the problem into a half-hour consultation where I absolutely know that I've got the essence. And that's the difference. It's the shortest space between two points is a straight line. So HFA and the understanding homeopathy from this practical laws of nature sort of way that Hahnemann was talking about in the Organon is the straight line. It's not the meander through the forest. Perhaps not as beautiful or scenic. I give it, I get that. But at the same time, very pragmatic. So I guess it depends on what you want to do. You can take the long way home, the scenic route there, and people like that. But it depends. If you're wanting to just be really pragmatic and turn patients over and get these quick and good results, which is really at the heart of it what I wanted to do, then I needed to take that straight line. So this is what it ends up coming down to. When you break it right down, and of course that's what homeopathy is doing, it's taking a product, either a molecule or an organic life form. Then what it's doing is that it is breaking down its molecular structure to understand the laws that bind it together. So what we can do, that knowledge is already available. So what we can do is that we can just go back to the pre-substance. So what we're looking at here is charge, right? So we have these quarks which go to form protons, neutrons, electrons, and so on. Each one of those, the arrangement of that creates a particular charge that has an action. So one, we have protons that have a positive charge. Two positive charges will repel, but we have electrons with a negative charge and a positive and a negative attract. So we already have two laws of motion, attraction and repulsion. Then we have this third where the neutrons come in, and now two positive charges or more, depending on the amount of neutrons, can go now to live in a confined area, and all of a sudden we have hydrogen becoming helium all the way up into making the most complex inorganic life forms, which have turned into organic life forms, and we're talking to each other. But the laws that hold all these cells together are the same three laws. And that's what's so magnificent about this if we begin to understand it. It's not running down the blueprint. It's seeing the magnificence of the blueprint and how one single pattern can be represented and exhibit itself into 10 gazillion different life forms and manifestations. But once you understand that it's the same pattern, you're not blinded by the difference. You're fascinated by the similars. So when we have this attraction, repulsion, and fusion, if let's bring all of this back now, into what Hahnemann was seeing. He was seeing that in some people there will be a repelling action. He called it a centrifugal action. That centrifugal action he termed Sora, the throwing out. So it's an immune system or a defense system where the dominance of the force of motion, that protective force, is an outward protective motion. Then there are others where we were talking about they were the electrons, where you had a negative charge, and we spoke about the negative being attracted to the positive. So you have this attraction. Attraction is bringing everything inward. Now, of course, we see this. We see this all the way through nature representing itself by gravity. And we can also see it too by the retraction of life force from the circumference to the center. Now we're talking about the exact opposite of what the Sora was. Remember, Sora is centrifugal. So it's throwing from the inside to the outside, whereas inward motion is conserving energy, and it is taking all the energy from the outside to the inside, where it can preserve the function of vital organs. Now, we can sit here and say it in that way, and we say, well, I can see why that would be beneficial. And if it's really true, and if it is a similar, it means that we should see this repeating itself, not just in us, but throughout all of nature. And that's exactly what we do see. We see bears, for example, hibernating in the winter, meaning that they conserve all their outward motion, drawing it into the center and hibernating. And we also see that with deciduous trees that drop all their leaves so they can conserve their energy in the vital center part so they can withstand the external stress. Now, this is what Hahnemann called this inward motion, the syphilitic. We see this in the inward motion of the Ryder Cab. We see this in the inward motion of Mercury. We see it in the inward motion of Aurum. This is from, and we see it in the disease itself. It starts on the periphery and works its way into the center. That's what Hahnemann was saying. He put it all into bacterial pathological terms. But what he was saying was that it's a big difference from, say, the leprosy that starts internally but then seems to affect the outside where the fingers and the digits begin to fall off and so on. But the person, the sufferer, can live for 20, 30, 40 years with this. Whereas with the syphilis, it starts on the outside, but then it travels as it progresses from first stage, secondary into tertiary. It goes from the skin lesion into more organic and then finally into the nervous system and the brain becoming neurosyphilis, hitting us at our deepest core. Now, he said that all disease is going to take one of these three forms. Now, he is he's packaging all of this into pathological terms because that's his job. He's a doctor. But what I want you to do is that it's confusing. And we know it's confusing because 200 years after Hahnemann's idea, we're no further down the track in understanding what he termed a miasm than we are when he wrote it down. That's been the whole problem. That's why I've said 1,000 times already that there are as many homeopathic theories as there are homeopaths themselves. That is living proof of the confusion that it takes place. And this is because he's taken these motions, like inward and outward motion, he has taken them and he's put them as a disease. It's just, and so we're trying to view it through the eyes of pathology rather than through the eyes of motion. Which way is it traveling? It is really when you start looking at the remedies that you see what they have in common is not the pathology. It's the action that they take. So when you see it mimicked in nature, for example, inward motion, everything in homeopathy is that syphilis is bad. And we still talk about this now. We still talk about that when you're in the light stage and there's not much going on and you're just not sleeping all that well, for example, well, that's the psoriatic phase. But once you start getting into the ulceration or the suicidal depression or you're drinking yourself to death or you're starting the, you know, the organic breakdown, well, that's the syphilitic stage. We, you know, look, nearly every homeopath on the planet talks in this sort of fashion. So we're talking in a hierarchical fashion. But in nature, we don't see that hierarchy, certainly not in force or motion. We don't see that hierarchy at all. It just simply is. And now we're getting down to the fact that, all right, well, if inward motion is destructive, then why do bears and deciduous trees do it? And then we start scratching our head and realizing, well, in fact, that's not a destructive move. That is actually not a destructive move at all. It's a very constructive move. It's a way of dealing with stress. It is a self-protection. Now, here's where I'm going to move away from the contemporary models. This and the Hahnemannian model just a little. I am going to stick with the fact that Hahnemann's idea of outward motion, Sora, fixed bonding motion as psychosis, and also to the inward motion of syphilis. We see it in the remedies. It's what Hahnemann talks about and so on. So I'm sticking with that. So when you see it repeating itself all the way through nature, as a similimum should, then what we also understand is that it's not malevolent. And that came to the conclusion that this is how homeopathy works. It's not at a at a chronic disease level here. We are not dealing with miasms as something malevolent, a disease being passed on from one generation to the other that our immune system cannot possibly fight back. Hahnemann says that there is no way that our immune systems can overpower this underlying miasm. Mind you, nowhere else in nature does that happen. We don't see that as a similimum. What we do see as a similimum is that if a breed or a species cannot fight a stress or a germ, then that breed or species becomes extinct. Human beings have not become extinct. We're touching 7 billion. We're a long way from extinct. And so as a result of that, I have to conclude, well, then what are we dealing with? What is actually happening when deciduous trees withdraw their energy from the circumference into the center? Well, they're doing it to withstand stress. They're doing it to protect themselves. So now becomes the question, which to me is already answered because nature is giving me the answer. But to homeopaths, this is a revelation. This is a big deal, or it should be a big deal. It shouldn't be treated with the apathy that it's being treated with, but because this is a big, big deal. What we're dealing with is not a disease. It is a constructive way that nature is giving us to deal with stress and infection and anything that comes our way. So when we give a remedy to a person who is dominant in inward energy, conserving, that's how they protect themselves. When we are giving a remedy that also has that inward energy, then we are doubling up on that self-energy and helping them withstand that stress twice as much as they could do without the remedy. And that's how constitutional remedies work. This is also why, if we were to choose sulfur, outward motion, instead of mercury, inward motion, to an inward motion conserving patient, there will be negative ramifications. And we hear and read all the way through homeopathic literature that not only will the well-indicated remedy fail to relieve, but we also have a library of different strategies to explain what we do next when we get aggravations. Well, what I'm saying is that I'm not saying that I don't get any aggravations, but the aggravations that I do get are unbelievably minimal compared to the way that it used to be, because I have figured out a way that I can tell what is the dominant energy of this person's survival instinct before I give the remedy. Now, you can't have a repeating pattern, a fractal pattern. What we're saying is that these laws and energies that govern and pre even the particles, the proton, neutron, and electrons themselves, but even once they're formed, they are still the dominant governing power. And those protons, neutrons, and electrons form every single person on this planet. So those laws that affect them affect us, and they are there for us. Nature is benevolent, not malevolent. This is one of the biggest things to understand in the treatment of chronic disease, or at least energy-related chronic disease. So we have here that we're already understanding the simulamum in a different light. Not necessarily that people are mimicking in some anthropomorphic sense the some falcon or some sea sponge or whatever. That's surface level. I'm talking about much deeper than this. I'm talking about understanding that when somebody is going to be dominant in, let's just say, inward motion, then that dominance is going to replicate itself as a Fibonacci pattern, as a Mandelbrot, as a fractal pattern. It is going to mimic itself through every aspect of that person, including not just their pathology, but more importantly, their physical makeup. So what happens now if you can read that physical makeup? You're either saying the simulamum exists or it doesn't exist. So if the simulamum doesn't exist, then nature isn't repeating itself over and over and over again, well, then we may as well put our pens down and go out and go for a run, because we're wasting our time. But if the simulamum does exist, then it exists on every level, just the same way mathematics tells us it does. And so if it exists on every level, then we should be able to read it. And that's exactly what HFA is about. It's about understanding that facial features, as well as every other aspect, once you are dominant and you are repeating a pattern, then that pattern shows everywhere, including your physical makeup. And what HFA has done through really painstaking research, I kid you not, this is not one of these fly-by-night sort of ideas where a new theory is coming out that's supposedly tested and tried, but it's coming out every 3 months. This is something where the same research has been going on for coming up to nearly 15 years, 12 years predominantly in the making of this, over and over and over and over again. And it's because we can understand, we can read nature's pattern. Nature's blueprint is right there in your face if you know how to read it. I'm not talking about palm reading or whether or not you're going to win the lottery next week. That's just rubbish. I don't care about that. But what it does do is that it tells me how you defend yourself. And to me, as a homeopath, understanding that that's what a miasm is, that's the major thing that I need to know. Now I understand why Hahnemann wrote, if you have the simulamum alone when you're treating chronic disease, you won't get it. But if you have the simulamum and you understand the underlying miasm, the way the person defends themselves, and you match those two together, now you've got it. Now you're a homeopath. Now, don't worry about your materia medica. Materia medica are the tools of the trade. They're not the trade. If you want to focus on materia medica, this is like telling a person who's a builder, and all we're going to do is discuss which nail we're going to hammer into the wood. That's not the important part. And the more you focus on the nail and miss how to read plans, draw plans, and do everything else that you need to do to put up a house, then the more lost you're going to become. It's about understanding the plan. The plan is the simillimen. If you don't get the simillimen, then how do you get homeopathy? What I want to do next week is that I want to talk about the facial features themselves, how they came about, what they actually are, and how to read them. But I think that's enough. It's a bit of a diatribe, isn't it?
Well, that was pretty clear. My question, you mentioned the palm reading. Of course, the palm reading for foretelling the future, for winning the lottery or something, doesn't seem to match up with what you say. However, I'm wondering, you know, each of us do have the lines are unique as an individual, like a fingerprint. And they also have particular lines and swirls and dimensions, a depth and branches, and just like a tree. Can you not read the hands in a similar way if you had done 15 years worth of analysis just to look at thousands of hands?
Well, you probably could. I mean, whether or not you can do it to predict the future where free will is meant to be dominant is a completely different issue. But are you, when you're asking, can you see by the lines of your hands that there are going to be that it's going to be a blueprint of self and individuality, then the answer is absolutely yes. And fingerprints are a great example of that, where no two fingerprints are the same. This is why fingerprints are so important in crime. But whether or not you're going to be able to tell whether or not you're going to win the lottery, or, you know, particularly in a future where supposedly free will and our choice comes into it, well, then that's a different thing. You may be able to do it. I'm not saying you can't. I'm not trying to insult people that are into palm reading. All I'm saying is that I can't do it. And yes, you're right. The lines on your hands will show a certain unique pattern that displays you. You are that unique individuality, and your fingerprints prove it. The thing with it is that you don't read necessarily fingerprints. We're not adept at reading fingerprints. And the other thing about your hands is that they might be tools to be able to construct, but they are not vehicles of expression, whereas our face is a vehicle of expression. You can, if you take a look at somebody's hands, if I give you a picture, you have no idea whether they're malevolent, whether or not they wish you harm, whether or not they're cheerful, happy, friendly, they're going to be your friend, or they're somebody to avoid. You've got no idea whatsoever. We convey emotion by our face. If you sit down and you try and pull no facial features whatsoever, you try not to move your face and then convey two things to me, one happiness and the other one sadness. You can't do it. You can sit there with a blank face and say, I am very happy. But the simple fact of the matter is that I will not believe you or understand you until I see the smile and your eyes crinkle up and your nose crinkle up and all with the smile, and I say, well, that person's happy. So the reason why the face is more important is because it's human beings' communication tool. It's the way thoughts will create, and we can verbalize ideas, but we can't do emotion. We can't report our emphasis of emotion and our experience and our feeling into it by intonation and facial structure. That's how facial features, I mean, the faces that we pull, the smile, the mouth down turn when they're unhappy, the growl when we're angry or upset. These are all ways that we convey our inner world to the outer world. So, yes, you could do HFA by not doing the face part. You could do it by reading toenails if you really could. I mean, there's individuality there. It's whether or not you can spot it. How easy is it for us to read. There is individuality in every single hepatocyte that's on our, in our liver too, but it's whether or not we can actually consciously recognize that individuality. Our body certainly can, because you can't just rip out my liver and put it into your body without a whole host of antibiotics and suppressants. So clearly your body can recognize it, but can your mind consciously recognize it? The answer is not really. And that's why we identify people by our face. And that's what makes the facial analysis so important. You want to, if you think you can do it by fingernails or palms or whatever, then the answer is yes, there is individuality there. But how usable and consciously recognizable is that individuality? That's the key.
Okay, that was a pretty strong answer. I mean, I agree that the face is probably has the most clues and cues and expression to demonstrate the identity of that individual. And as you're speaking and teaching us the different forces in which are coming into play. And I do think that the hands also are very expressive, and in the past, there were physicians who documented things like spots and how much around the cuticle it is, and color and finger color and things like, and shape and size and length of fingers. I mean, there are indications that we can get some information from the hands. Obviously, from the face, you're going to get the most, because that's how we recognize each other. So I'm up for learning more at the next session that you have on Monday, 8 o'clock at Eastern Time, USA, and that's Tuesday at 10 a.m. in Australia. And we're not going to have a session with Dr. Adil this Wednesday yet. He's still teaching. And Thursday we do have, at 11 o'clock, Dr. Christina Chambreau talking about heartworm and your pets. And then afterwards, the current events and news about vaccines that are going on. I just read some not so pleasant news about those folks who are really working hard on the vaccines, that the doctors are going to request that parents give their children aspirin before and after the vaccine to subdue the typical body's reaction to those vaccinations, of fever and swelling and things like that, inflammation, which are the body's natural means of protecting itself. And they want to subdue that. And then they also say, they give about five different things that you can do of swaddling and rocking and keeping them cool and other things to tone down the response of the body from the injection. I don't know if you want to stay on the line and talk about that for a minute.
I do have to go. It's a very interesting topic, but unfortunately I can't just at the moment. I've got people waiting,
okay,
so sorry about it.
That's fine. So I knew that you were supposed to leave right on the dot, so go ahead out and I will conclude the show. And I thank everybody.
Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye. I want to thank everybody who has listened. We have just a few people in the chat today, and I suppose maybe everybody's kind of lectured out or talked out because we had the National Center for Homeopathy annual meeting, and we were nonstop 3 days of lectures that were very enlightening from the homeopaths around the world. We had so many people speaking about things, about the way that we interact and have a symbiotic relationship with the bacteria, with the flora, intestinal flora, and what happens to our bodies when there is some sort of a stress, whether it is an emotional stress, a physical stress, an outside stress, or we're going to the hospital and we've had a surgery and afterwards, due to the surgery itself or to antibiotics, we have damaged the natural intestinal flora in some way, and that starts a whole gamut of autoimmune type diseases that start occurring. And that was a report by Dr. Malcolm Russell, I think it is, or I never know whether to call him Russell Malcolm or Malcolm Russell, but you can. I will be sending some information about him pretty soon. And many other people and the different ways that they take a case. We did have a person, Liz Lehler, who was a psychiatrist, who was talking about taking the delusions that a person has and an analysis that way. So HFA, the homeopathy facial analysis, is a wonderful method, and I would love to see the way that it is quick and easy. We really feel confident, and this is probably the basis of homeopathy, feeling really secure and confident in the selection of the remedy that's going to match that pattern for that individual. And everybody, you know, is unique. And in their uniqueness, they have different modes of acting and learning and viewing the world. And that's probably why we have so many different methods, because each person finds the method that really suits them and works the best for them and the way that they interact with their patient. And probably a lot of people will be, like the law of attraction, attracted to Grant's method, which is very structured and a real tool, a very hard tool that you can put carry around with you and recognize these facial structures and know that this is going to lead you to one of these forces in nature, whether it's inward, outward, or centrifugal force, whatever it is, that this is going to be very, very helpful to you. So I want to tell folks to go ahead and visit the website, www.vcch.org. There is lots of information and tools for you to try out, plus coursework that you can sign up for, and it's very you're gonna think it's gonna be a good value for what you receive, and you can do it at your own pace. Take these classes and start at any time, so it's not time limited in that way. And, of course, they always will respond to your needs and your questions. So to finish up the last moment, I do ask for folks to get on to Homeopathy World Community. Participate if you're a member, to comment and put blogs, write your thoughts, what you're teaching, your experience with patients, and also go ahead and tweet, share, put this show onto Facebook. Listen to it again, because, you know, there's so much to learn in one time limited space. You can listen over and over. Put it on while you're in the kitchen preparing a meal. When you're going on a walk, put it on your mobile cell phone and listen again and see if it makes sense to you. So I'm going to end today's show, and the next show up is going to be Thursday at 11 o'clock. And also I want to mention Monday, we're going to have on April 30th, Mary Aspinwall talking about fertility and infertility in the modern world. So thanks so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to Homeopathy and Facial Analysis on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Bruck and Grant Bentley. We encourage you to follow our show. Click the reminder button to receive email notices when shows air. Share with friends on Facebook and MySpace, and also Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. See you next time.